Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to A Candle of the Night, a Star Wars Force and Destiny adventure. We are on episode number 6, which we have titled The Climber, for reasons which you will see. Not much in the way of news tonight, but I did want to take a moment to dedicate this episode to the memory of Stan Lee, who passed away last week. He is, of course, the creator of a lot of our most famous Marvel superheroes, and I am a great appreciator of Marvel, so I wanted to dedicate this episode to him. I also wanted to remind everyone our website is www.candleofthenight.com, and we welcome your emails and feedback. I am happy to read them on the show. Our email address is feedback@candleofthenight.com. And with that, we shall continue our adventures. All right, so let's get started. I will just do our recap. All right, so we are now on session 6 of our Star Wars Force and Destiny adventure, A Candle or the Night. Last time, your party arrived to Duskin's Cove and you collected Tyrus from the medical pavilion. You met a medical droid there who seems to be running the place since the chief physician, a man named Dr. Gray, seems to be too drunk to perform his duties. This droid, KR-8T, also enlists the party's help to locate a scientist named Dr. Bendix. The party quickly realizes it's the very same scientist from their dreams that accompanied the Jedi refugees and invented a device that exploded the Adhara Grey. KR-AT reveals there are also others hunting the scientist, but Dr. Grey wants to find him to question him on the nature of the unusual injuries they're caring for at the clinic. After taking a little break at the Bantha for some drinks, Hornaday presents the party with a map. This map was from Gilly and the Cartographer's Guild, and it revealed the general layout of the region around Duskin's Cove. Jensa reaches out with the Force, though to her she's just trusting her gut, and catches flashes of visions that cause her to conclude that Faze Needles is the place they should go in their race to find Dr. Bendix and the refugees. Upon leaving the Bantha, they are confronted by a Captain Greth of the notorious pirate clan, the Shrouded Bane. He appeals to Akai and tries to get him to work for them in their salvage efforts, and he warns the party against positioning themselves counter to his interests. After some shopping where Tyrus purchases a missile for the rest of the group, since no one else seems to have any money, the party turns in for the night to a cozy cargo container decked out with luxury furnishings. Upon awakening, there was a knock at the door, revealing a shiny protocol droid dressed in a business suit who represented Rodial Luxury Holdings. He came at the behest of the board and the CEO, who seems to know Tyrus's well-connected family. The board has offered, with a veiled threat included, of exposure, to hire the party as consultants. Their job would be to assist in asset recovery and turn over evidence of the terrorist act that resulted in the destruction of their vessel. Tyrus and the group politely decline. Finally, after a coffee run in the morning, Jensa finds Victor at the Sabacc tables in the Buxom Bantha. Clearly up to something in terms of trying to make connections with the locals, he discreetly waves Jensa away so she doesn't disturb him. After the game, he emerges 500 credits richer from gambling and joins the party as they set out for Faze Needles.
You know what, Scott? I don't think Albie likes you. You get, like, mind raped at Kirk gets like 500 credits.
One said life would be fair.
I know, right?
He's an underworld character. Of course, I assume he's somewhat good at gambling. I like it to be sort of this random thing that happens, you know, when you can't be there as Session. Are you going to make money or are you going to end up mind raped? No one quite knows.
I could actually be mind raped and nobody knows.
That is true. You could have actually won 1,000 and lost 500 to a shady hooker who gave you a horrible STD that will, you know, come back.
Or maybe I did the mind raping.
Oh, jeez.
You now have space for release. No, I'm just kidding.
And you have syphilis.
All right, so you guys are still at Duskin's Cove. You are preparing to depart. Everybody have a copy of the map? You should all be able to see it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I should point out, and Bayor was, adept at pointing this out. Technically, the map is in Nobi's possession, but I'm operating under the assumption that he's freely showing it to everyone.
I'll share.
I will also point out that you were given, you all have pocket comlinks, and a device like that will work across most of the region that you see on this map. So in a planetary region, it will work in terms of range. So you now have the frequencies for both Gilly and for Hornaday. So you can reach them typically on the comlinks if you need to.
Hey, Nobi.
Yeah.
Can I hold the map so that I can get us where we're going?
Can you hold the map? Yes, you can hold them up.
Since I'm the one with the survival skill, unless somebody else wants to do that, unless you've got survival.
I do have survival.
So basically we're like, in character, we're both looking at the map and trying to like basically figure out the best way to go.
I can lead, you can aid, that's fine.
Cool.
Now that you have officially tamed these creatures, specifically Nobi and Jensa. You're the ones with survival skill and did the taming. I want you to name them, please. They are your mounts.
I'm going to name mine Guinness in the support of our
right. Guinness. You are now the proud papa of Guinness. He is a desert viractyl alpha. And why don't we call Akai's Scar, since it has a scar?
I shall name mine Quetzal.
Pretzel?
Quetzal.
That's that ancient alien stuff.
Yeah.
The sun is just rising.
Yeah, I just need to get Jensa like a green bird tattoo on her lower back, and she'll be all good.
Before we run out, let's make sure we all have enough resources for our trip.
Actually, I was going to say, additionally, as we kind of plot our route, since we're about to roll for this, could I possibly use my forager skill to kind of, like, pick a route that's going to give us better chances at finding water on the way? I don't know what we have access to or if we can tell much from the map, but if we can...
So the way that Forager would probably come into play is if you were actively looking for food or water,
yeah, I know.
You get
I was
to
just wondering.
Remove disadvantage. But I will point out you have 2 full days worth of water and rations. One other very important thing I just want to cover. Everybody roll 1 force dice. We are going to start using the destiny points. So you all are rolling to set up the destiny pool here. So everybody roll just 1 force dice, please. Yeah. Okay, so I had you all roll a force dice because we haven't been using destiny points, which is a feature of the game that I think we should start using. Basically, under your dice, you see over, there's like a little light side symbol, and there's currently 5 like dark symbols, dark side tokens.
Mm-hmm.
You guys can use those when you want to. So the idea is... If you want to upgrade any skill or attack roll that you make, you can tell me and we will spend a light side. You only have 1 at the moment, a light side token, and you get to upgrade your upgrade the dice of your skill. So basically the idea is when you really need something to work, you spend one of those. And the way the system works is you spend one and the token flips to the dark side and your enemies get to spend one. So right now the sort of GM controlled enemies, just because of how you rolled, have like five of them and you have one. But if they start spending them, you'll get more on your side.
Nice.
So everything stays balanced. But so don't forget you have them. Use them when you feel you need them. Your enemies will start using them against you. And I should also point out, not only can you upgrade your own attack, but you can downgrade an enemy's attack. So if someone hits you or is attacking you, you can spend one to downgrade their attack against you. And then last sort of point, I am going to be awarding hero points for role-playing. So,
woo-hoo!
You know, when you play your character's personality to, you know, you really get into your character and kind of role-play their personality, especially their morality and how they would struggle or decide to behave, I'll give you a hero point. The person with the most hero points at the end of a session basically gets a special ability that they'll be able to use typically once during the next session. And that ability, which I'm just calling a force boon, you'll roll randomly off a table to see what you get, and then you have it for the whole next session. And I am actually retroactively awarding one from last session to Jensa.
Aw, thanks.
Because of her role-playing, her character's concern about you guys displaying your abilities. So, Jensa, real fast.
Valid concern.
Roll that little purple, fuchsia-colored D10 down there. Okay, you rolled a 7 on that. Okay, so you get a one-time use ability called Guarded by the Force. It basically allows you to negate any single attack against you one time.
So basically when I see like a bunch of explosions and like, you know, critical success stuff against my character, that's when I say, I would like to use my boon, please, now.
Yes. And it expires at the end of the session. So just remember you have it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I turn it over to you guys. Very good. Sarah, tell us, I assume you're heading to Thay's Needles. Is that your goal?
Yep.
At this point?
Our goal is Thay's Needles.
Okay, so Sarah leads the way as your three Viractyls kind of rear up and start running. You're probably going, you know, somewhere around 40 miles an hour, kind of speeding across the sands as you leave Duskin's Cove behind you. You look around and there's a variety of others kind of charging off in all directions. It is early morning. Everybody's kind of off salvaging today. Times of the essence, because
the
after
guys,
days...
the Mandalorians that I saw shooting at the resistance people, in my gut feeling.
Yes.
I'm just gonna kind of like do Victor to like, you know, do a little head jerk in their direction. With the,
at the moment,
we need
actually,
to watch out for those dudes.
You do not see them right now. You don't see any Shrouded Bane people. You see kind of a bunch of just shabbily dressed spacers and pirates, and they're just kind of, some people are on speeders, some are on little skiffs that are kind of slowly putting along.
Okay. Well, as we're heading out, say we really should watch out for those Mandalorians. I got a bad vibe from that guy.
Really? Bad vibe from Mandalorians? I am shocked. They seem like such upstanding citizens.
He seemed particularly volatile.
I'll keep an eye out.
You are leading the party across what is known as Bandit's Run, which is an enormous sort of cracked earth kind of salt flat to the west of Duskin's Cove. The wind is pretty calm right now, and you have great visibility, so you don't have much difficulty kind of steering your way kind of northward towards what is marked on your map as Thay's Needles. You are noticing certain groups of the other kind of adventurers slash salvagers are kind of splitting off in various directions, so not everybody's going in the same direction you are. A large part of the group is, because it probably is the closest target. And we will say, as you're riding, it's going to be about an hour of time we'll be passing before I'm going to have you make another navigational check. Is there anything anyone else in the group wants to do while you are riding?
I'm basically just keeping my eyes peeled for anything that's going to remind me of my gut feeling.
Yeah, I'm just keeping an eye out, man.
All right, let's, Sarah, roll us another survival check with average difficulty. Okay, so as you continue riding forward, you seem to have a little bit of difficulty with your mount. Quetzal is kind of seeming to be hungry or something. He's pulling and kind of trying to steer you off a little more westward. You're not quite sure what he's trying to get to, but since you are leading the group, the others are kind of veering off with you.
I will start fussing at him.
And it kind of costs you another hour of daylight kind of wrangling him back towards the direction you want to go. And during that time, you have most of the group is still within view of you, although there's a pack of hooded kind of scavengers that are riding off considerably ahead of you, and you sort of lose sight of them in the winds and the sands blowing ahead of you, probably within the first, 50 to 100 feet, and they're kind of getting ahead of you.
Can we I don't think we want to, like, just ignore them, or do we want to stay first to get there? Kind of asking the group.
I don't think this is a race.
I don't either.
Yeah, if they're not messing with us.
Yeah, I don't want to antagonize them unnecessarily.
The idea is whoever gets to the site first is probably going to find the information best. So if there are a bunch of scavengers who are going to get there before we are, that could be a problem.
Well, we can try to, like, catch up in a non-offensive way. I don't know, kind of like a veer, so it kind of just seems coincidental and not like we're trying to start a race.
Can we go around them?
Let me see. I guess I'll attempt another survival.
Go ahead and, yeah, another survival average difficulty. And, all right, so, you both, due to your skill handling these animals and your clear view and your good intuition about where you need to be, you kind of make good time through the last of Bandit's Run. You are not harried or attacked or bothered in any way by the others who are kind of racing along with you. And then as you kind of pass the end of Bandit's Run heading northward, the cracked earth of the salt flats kind of gives way to very beautiful kind of rolling, rippling sands. And then ahead of you, coming into view is something you've never really seen before. There's these beautiful, sort of ethereal, wispy, tall protrusions from the earth. Almost the way a field of wheat might kind of be blowing in the wind, except these are a good 50 feet high. Not close enough to see what they're made of, but they're spanning all the way across the visible path in front of you, and they are kind of swaying in the wind.
We assume those are the needles?
Well, You have no specific intelligence or information on what those are or why they were marked as such on the map, but
do they look familiar from my weird vision of that area?
They do. They would be what you saw to give you the intuition
that
was the place on the map to go. Yeah.
I think we're in the right spot.
As you kind of approach, they're now maybe about 20, 30 feet ahead of you, and the group kind of stops, and you decide how to proceed. As you get a closer look, I'd like everybody to roll a perception check, please, with average difficulty, which is 2 purple dice.
Okay, my keen eye says I can remove a black square per rank of keen eye from perception and vigilance checks. I don't know what that
means.
Very
good. What it means is if you are at a disadvantage for any reason, you are able to remove it. But you're currently not at a disadvantage.
Okay, just making sure black die isn't like a...
All right, so... Nobi, as you look at these, you know, 50-foot tall, kind of alien-like swaying things, they appear to have a kind of almost leathery texture to the surface. And you get the impression that they're not plant life. There's something organic here. You also notice, interestingly, up in the very, very high points of these sort of swaying needles, if we're going to call them that, you see these little flying creatures. They almost look, from an extreme distance, like hummingbirds that are maybe the size of a bowling ball, maybe. They're very light and flittery. Their wings are moving quickly, and they're in little... packs, and they're sort of fluttering around together in the sky, but hovering right at the top of these needles as they sway.
Would this be a good time for vigilance to try to determine the threat level of these rather unusual hummingbirds?
Go ahead, yes. Okay, Tyra, so your assessment of the situation as you kind of observe, the movement of the hummingbirds doesn't strike you like hummingbirds. In other words, they're not seemingly going from, you know, arm to arm doing anything feeding. They seem to be moving in a, almost like the way you'd imagine a carrion bird. They're kind of surveying the ground beneath them. You do catch about 50 feet off to the northeast. There seems to be a small humanoid-shaped body on the ground, and there's a swarm of them kind of picking at what you'd guess would be its eyes. So they're kind of picking at its eyes, sort of fluttering around his face.
Does anyone have binoculars to look a little bit closer?
I will pull my binoculars.
I do not.
I will take a All peek, right, and then I will hand them over to Tyrus, since he asked for them.
Tyrus, as you peer through the macro binoculars, you get a better, more magnified view of what you see there, and you see 7 to 8 of these fluttering creatures kind of... they have long, sharp beaks, and they're kind of picking and pecking at the face of this seemingly dead guy. Pulling at, you know, the eye, kind of trying to pull it out of its socket. You do notice in his chest there is a large circular gaping wound. Looks way too big to have been inflicted by these bird-like creatures.
So there are vulture-like creatures picking at an obviously very dead person. Do we see anything else, or just the one body?
When you look across, scanning the field with your macro binoculars, past 100 feet in front of you, you see nothing but open sand with the needles swaying. Within the first 20 or 30 feet, you see a few scattered bodies. There would look like a couple small wrecked vehicles, all with similar gaping circular wounds in either their chest or shoulder or abdomen. And
can we tell what kind of beings these are or were?
Yes.
Does xenology or outer rim work to determine?
I would allow you to make a roll for that, yeah. And tell me specifically what you're trying to determine, who the victims were or what you're seeing in front of you with the wildlife.
Well, I'm wondering if this... Well, and I'm wondering if these are people who've tried to survey this site ahead of us, or is this the result of some sort of crash? Are these scavengers, or are these potentially people that were on the transport?
These look like fresh bodies. They're still actively bleeding from the wounds. There's still smoke coming off of a few of the small craft that were crashed.
So this suggests something that's happened very recently.
One of them you recognize to be the hooded figures that rode ahead of you earlier.
And they're dead already?
That's what I was wondering.
How?
No, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
I guess we got to figure out if those little flying features are like...
I'm immediately losing all interest in the corpses and surveying our surroundings, and will be doing so until I state otherwise. Gun drawn, I am totally paying attention to our surroundings.
Yeah, we can't go near these tree things.
Yeah, I think that the flying monkeys are the least of our worries at the moment.
Yeah, I think those trees are the problem. The main problem.
How do you figure?
Or there's someone else.
Man, this is the best moon ever. I wonder why this isn't a major vacation spot. All the planets,
west the dumpster moon.
Yeah, a space dumpster.
If they are organic, Tyrus, can you reach out to them?
Can I reach out to the birds or to the...
If they're organic, can you reach out?
Oh, that's actually an interesting thought. Can I reach out to the needles?
Yeah.
You may roll an attempt with a force dice to use your influence ability. You rolled two light side pips, so that is a considerable success. And even though you only have sort of the basic version of influence, you can choose to... what kind of thought or message or emotion do you want to be sending to this creature or whatever it is?
Well, I'm trying to perceive if it's an attack mode.
As you reach out to try and probe, you don't feel any kind of sentience in the way that you did with the cacti.
Okay.
I mean, you do sense a life form, but you're not... There's no readable emotion or sort of mindset off of them that you can pick up on. You are picking up off of the bird-like creatures, just sort of a sensation of ravenous hunger.
Bird brains.
Can I use xenology to find out about those bird brain type creatures?
Yeah, you could roll a xenology check. You would be rolling a hard difficulty, 3 purple dice. You have no idea what these are.
Damn.
So as you stand here on the precipice of the phase needle area beginning and inevitably the target beyond it, you are faced with a conundrum of how to proceed.
I think those bird-like features are just scavengers. and they're going after those.
How would the plants have killed them? Like, does it look like they move? I mean...
Well, big gaping holes, that's never good.
Yeah, he said they're leathery. They're not like, it's not like bark.
Which one of us has heal?
A guy.
Medical skills?
A guy.
Maybe bio.
Yeah, bio, right?
Yeah.
And a guy.
Bio or Kai, can either of you tell the manner in which these guys died? Maybe if we figure out how the plant's attacking, we can navigate around it?
I mean, could I do that from a distance? I'm not getting close to those things.
Can we use stealth to sneak up and check out the bodies and maybe take some good stuff off the bodies if there's anything good to
take? Can we rope one from here?
I could force move one.
Yeah, drag one over here.
Okay.
Hey, that's a good idea. I get the...
Get out of my trick, that sucker over here.
I get the one with the most obvious wound, and I force move him towards us.
Go ahead and roll us a force check, please. Your force dice. One force dice. You start to hear the wind pick up, by the way.
That makes me worry.
Uh-huh.
I'm watching the plant.
Dark side, one dark side pip. Will you choose to use that?
Sure.
Okay, so in so doing, you have one conflict. Now, you are unable to move a creature of his size with only one pip on the result. In other words, to upgrade it to a human-sized person, you'd need to have two pips to do that. However, you can move his backpack, which is now sort of slung to the side of him, hanging off of one shoulder. The strap is still like kind of loosely around one arm, but it's visible and it's right there.
Okay. Didn't I have the move thing evolved so that I can move people like objects?
You do have the ability to do so. However, it is dependent on the result of the roll. So, if you look up above how Tyrus rolled two pips, basically you need one pip to activate the basic power and one extra pip to upgrade it to a human-sized person.
Albie, can I force jump over to him and grab his backpack?
Well, so yeah, no, I'll just pull it towards us. I'll pull the backpack towards us.
Okay, so as you pull the backpack towards you, it starts dragging across the sand. And all of a sudden, you hear a sound that's kind of like a thump, thump, thump. And then a moment later, specifically about 3 to 4 seconds later, you see a tendril or some sort of sharp protrusion immediately stab up through the sand and puncture the backpack, lifting it up in the air. And then it immediately withdraws back into the sand. And then,
oh, so that's why they call it the needles.
Yeah, those must be the infamous needles.
And then a swarm of the little birds kind of all, you know, viciously kind of, they kind of flutter down on top of this. They quickly realize it's nothing organic to eat, and they lose interest and fly back up towards the top of the swaying plants.
Well, nice. That answers that question. Marker on the map looks like it's actually to the northeast and not directly in this field. Would that be an accurate assessment?
The map is very simplified. It does seem to stretch quite widely across the horizon. You could circumnavigate it.
Yeah.
And you would estimate it might add probably a good 4 hours to your arrival time to the destination.
Unless we can figure out how to get through this, I suggest we circumnavigate, which
can
will
we,
probably
can
add
we
4 hours
use,
to our destination.
Can
I
we
agree.
Use stealth to sneak through?
I beg your pardon?
You want to try?
Can we use stealth to sneak through?
You certainly can try.
That doesn't sound promising.
I don't think you should touch the ground anywhere near there. Like
the stabby things? Can I try to use force power to tell them to stop attacking?
You don't believe they would be successful because there isn't really an intelligence there to interface with. Mm-hmm. You get the impression that this is a very mechanical sort of almost plant-like behavior. There's not a sentient mind behind it.
Are there any other backpacks or material that we can access?
You still see the backpack maybe 10 to 15 feet into the swaying plant tendrils in front of you. You could still continue dragging it towards you.
I want to try to drag it. I want to try also to help Byron.
I'll keep dragging towards this, but doesn't it have an enormous hole through it?
It does, yes. But as you continue dragging it forward, after the next 5 feet or so, you again hear this sort of thump, 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 thump. And knowing what's coming, you kind of pull it towards you faster, and the spike that comes out of the ground isn't fast enough and misses the backpack as you pull it to you, and it is now in your hands. So by your count, you have approximately 4 seconds from the appearance of the sound before the spike comes from the initial location.
All right. Well, what's in the bag?
As you rifle through the bag, you find some rations, which would be the equivalent of additional day of rations. You also find a credit stick with 100 credits on it.
Sweet.
You also find one stim pack.
Nice.
Who's the healer?
Which I will add to your inventory.
Oh, okay. You should definitely hang on to that then.
Nice.
We can split up money and stuff later, but the healer should definitely have the medical stuff.
Byer, I'm just going to add that money to your money for the moment, and you guys can kind of settle it all later.
Alright.
To you guys what to do next.
Let's go around. I don't like these things.
Yeah, I think we should go around unless someone has a way to circumvent them, and I'm not hearing any ideas, so.
I have no ideas, no.
Also remind
you. Are there any other loose backpacks? Make use of.
Actually, yeah, we've got to comm link back the natives, right? So let's ask them how people typically handle the needles here.
Our influence circle, contact network.
You have the frequency of Hornaday, and you have the frequency of Gillyweather. Who are you contacting?
Gilly's more the explorer type. He might know.
I think we should ask him if he knows how to get around these things.
Okay, which one of you is contacting him?
Kairos.
Okay.
Kairos is our face guy, right?
Very good. So, let's see, how do I do that?
You pull out your trusty comm link, you dial in the appropriate frequency, and you.
Okay.
What do you say into there?
Let's think about this. Gilly, we require your services.
So as you speak that through the comm link, you get, maybe 10 seconds of silence first, followed by, a little bit of crackling, and you do hear a response through the comm link.
Hi, mate. How can I help you?
We followed your map. We've found a few perforated individuals. Can you tell us more about these needles?
Yeah, you mind keeping it down a bit? I'm on a hunt. Keep your voice down. Where are you at exactly?
Where are we at? We're past Bandit's Run.
I give the appropriate coordinates to Tyrus, since we're the survival
farm. The south end of the needles?
Yeah.
Right, Thais Needles, yes. Basically, you want to,
And as he's saying that, all of a sudden, you kind of hear in the background...
Oh, man. I hate this planet.
Hold on a second.
Emma did not
on
like that.
On his side or our side? Yeah, the dog did not like that. Her dog.
Yeah, it clearly came through the comlink. And it was so loud it kind of like rattled the poor quality speakers that are on this device, you know.
Yeah, just babe, go really fast. I gotta go.
And it crackles down to nothing.
Well, let's go really fast and see what happens.
So it did take like, what, 4 seconds for them to pop out? We got this.
Now, how do we get across there in 4 seconds?
We just ride these mounts as fast as possible.
4 seconds from the last spot that you made sound on.
Don't stop.
So if you throw the backpack over to the side, you've got 4 seconds.
No, you just keep running.
You've got 4 seconds.
All right, let's make sure all the animals are watered and fed and nobody needs to stop for a pee break.
Yeah, as you say that, you turn around and see, like, the Viractyl just kind of lays a giant, you know, pile of...
There we go. Good,
crab
good
apples
job,
right out of
Quetzal.
The back, you know.
He'll be,
good job.
He'll be lighter.
he turns around and, like, sniffs back there for a minute and then grunts and kind of takes a few steps forward.
God, I hate animals.
Says the survivalist.
Hey! I can survive odd if I have to. I can live in a cave in the middle of nowhere and find water and food for myself. I'm also a pilot and would much rather be in something mechanical that doesn't poop. And preferably flies.
All right, so how are we proceeding?
How do we proceed?
So once all the animals are squared away, I think we should just shoot for it. Let's try.
How deep?
What's the worst that could happen?
Like, could we see the end of this?
You can't clearly see the end of it by eye, but when you use your macro binoculars, you kind of get the impression that you're probably looking at 200-300 feet before there's like little gaps in between and such. You can't quite see what's beyond it yet. And it's mostly just because of the sand. Like, it's the wind's picking up and it's kind of getting harder to see.
Would we stand a better chance if we had stealth?
Not if they're ground sensitive. If they pick up on vibrations in the ground, we're just gonna have to run. We're just gonna have to...
Yeah, but these things run at 40 miles per hour. We're gonna get through this forest in seconds.
As long as the mounts don't mess up, so, or they're not freaked out by the needles, so. All right, Quetzal. Yeah,
as long as they don't stop and they just keep going straight, we're good.
Sounds like a good plan. Let's hope it works.
All right.
How do I feel about this? How does my gut feel? Because if my gut feels good on this, I'm just going to go for it with Victor in tow.
Let's see. Go ahead and roll I assume you're specifically trying to use what you perceive as your intuition, but is actually your connection to the Force.
Yes.
Go ahead and roll a Force dice.
One?
Just one.
Sorry, you cut out there.
Only one. Until you take a talent that gets you to Force rating 2, you can only roll one dice. Oh, snap. You have a pretty good feeling about this.
Let's do it. I'm just gonna kick it.
Yeah.
Haul ass.
All right, give me a
time impaled 30 seconds later along with Quetzal. You guys know to go around.
Thank you guys for playing.
Let him get up to speed.
Yeah, Sarah, carefully describe to me how you're doing this, and then give me a survival check with two purple dice, please.
Well, I'm gonna try to serpentine because that seems like the smart thing to do. I'm gonna treat this like this animal was like a spaceship and I was trying to navigate an asteroid field, basically.
No, we're gonna crash.
We'll see.
She is a good pilot.
I'm trusting my gut. 4 more hours in this desert seems like a terrible idea.
All right.
I will let the force guide me on this endeavor. How do you do that thing where you add like a force point or something? Or is that
okay.
I don't want
to. So what you're going to do is you're spending a destiny point. So I'm going to flip that over. Oops.
We got a whole bunch more.
All right.
Focused in, like, force-wise. She might even have her eyes closed. I don't know. She's just letting her gut tell her which way to bob and weave. But basically, she just kicks in, and, you know, Victor's probably yelling at her to wait. Since we're two to a mount. She's just kind of seems to be one step ahead of the needles and almost... preemptively navigating the Baractyl. I don't know how else to describe how it would look.
So you take off at full speed. As you immediately cross the threshold, you begin to hear the telltale thump, thump, thump. Behind you now, about 10 feet, you see a tall spike kind of protrude from the sand, stabbing violently.
Victor might hear her like counting forward. Or something. Like, you know, if I'm like seeing this, like if I'm seeing a couple seconds in the future in my head, Victor might hear her counting before she, like, navigates to kind of keep track of the time difference between what she's seeing coming and what's actually happening.
So the rest of you now witness her successfully hauling ass, and her speed is sufficient to keep her from getting stabbed by these spikes. So, do you follow?
Yes.
I wait
follow approximately 4 seconds behind.
And then I follow.
Very good. Okay, so Nobi, you're piloting one, and let's say Bayor, you're piloting the other, because Akai is not here at the moment. And you give your Baractyls a good kick, they lurch forward, and you immediately take off at max speed, flying through the tall, swaying sort of tendrils. The birds kind of fluttering wildly above you, kind of following loosely your path of movement, just observing what's going to happen. You can almost imagine them salivating as they look down upon you, waiting for the inevitable skewering that's about to happen. However, you anticipate the sort of stabbing pattern, so you're able to kind of navigate through the first couple hundred feet without any problems. You avoid kind of going directly behind the person in front of you, so you don't catch a late stab from their run. And you manage to fully clear the needles after approximately 5 minutes of running at full speed. And you clear to the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
As you come to a stop, your poor Baractyls are panting wildly. Well done.
Now that worked.
As you look to survey the scene around you, you are now looking, the needles are to the south, to your back. You are facing towards the coast, and there is very rocky high crags. Immediately along the coast, and what you see in front of you is a little awe-inspiring. There is a kind of steep fall from the top of the crags, and a huge, just ragged scrape is cut all the way down through these like rocky hills as the inevitable impact point of this large piece of the Adhara Grey hit somewhere above on the rocky hills and then scraped its way all the way down the hills to a sandy promontory kind of right over a steep fall off. So the ship hit the rocks or the mountains, scraped its way down the face of the mountain and kind of settled precariously on this sandy edge. And it is, you can see it above you. It's a little bit of a climb to get up there, but you are now sort of at the foot of that large hill. So it looks like
it could potentially tip her over.
It does not look immediately in danger of tipping over, but you can tell because a large piece is just hanging precariously off the side.
Yeah,
it can't be enormously stable, especially because this is sand that it's sitting on.
Is this a big enough piece that we could potentially anchor it ourselves, or would this require mechanical equipment that we do not have with us?
It's just trying to get an idea right now, so you'd have to sort of scale this hill, climb up the sandy hill to get up to it. It's probably about a good 10-minute climb.
I'm just wondering if it's big enough that we could not secure it before we went in, or if it's something we potentially secure before we go in.
Oh, I should better describe what you're actually seeing. You are seeing a massive piece.
Oh, okay, so it's a big piece. All right, just making sure, because the map doesn't really show us how big the pieces are or anything.
What's that?
Is there a picture on the screen or no?
No.
No, just your map right now.
Would a vigilance check help us determine how risky it is?
Well, let's say first, so you get an idea, you are looking at a chunk of a hull of the ship that is roughly the size of a standard cruise ship right now. So, okay. Like a cruise ship you're familiar with.
We're not going to be securing that anyway.
And this is only one piece of the larger ship, so clearly this was a hulking vessel at one time. And,
all right, guys, we know that potentially the person that made that horrible purple stuff is alive, and I think that's probably very bad, most likely, that he survived. He might have potentially killed the Jedi that he was with and everyone on that ship to take this substance and maybe sell it. We don't know. So let's just proceed with extreme caution. And if we find this guy, we need to really, really question him before we let our guard down. Is everybody in agreement with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a sinking suspicion that the doctor is, if he's the only one out of that group alive, I have a really bad feeling that he is probably not someone, and I could be wrong. I'm wrong sometimes, but I have a bad feeling about it.
Albie, can we see anything going on? Any sign of activity? Any sign of energy coming from this piece?
Okay, so interestingly, now that you ask, yes, there does seem to be active power to certain sections of the hull, because you can see running lights along small sections. They're clearly torn, kind of just like your ship when it crashed. There's sort of bizarre areas that are perfectly intact, and then just next to them, completely annihilated, torn hull with sparks and things flying out. But some areas were seemingly preserved nearly perfectly, presumably from that sort of purple field that you saw yourself. So,
are we seeing any sign of that field or any hint of any purple glowing goo?
No, there is no obvious field emission. As you scan the ship, you can see in a few places there are some teams of scavengers kind of scaling the side of the ship with cables and grapples and things like that. There is a kind of large, what must be some kind of cargo access hatch that is at least in a reasonable climb to where you're at. And then otherwise, it's a pretty sleek kind of clean hull all the way up. So you, aside from a large cargo access point, you're either going to have to enter there or kind of climb up somehow.
Well, let's head there, but real quick, does anybody have any sort of scientific training or containment? Like, I don't even know what to call that goo.
That would fall if we under come probably in... education.
I've got a fair amount of education.
Do you think if we encountered whatever device produced that stuff or more of that stuff, you might be able to contain it or at least tell us how to handle it?
It's possible. It's an unknown. Right.
So don't touch anything weird unless Tyrus looks at it.
I say we climb up to the cargo access.
I completely agree.
Again, would stealth be handy at this point? Because again, there are other people.
And let's try to not tip our car.
Yeah, there's someone probably waiting for us inside.
What did I see here again? Didn't I?
Let's put it this way. At the place that you are at now, nothing looks familiar.
Okay, so the worst is yet to come, my friends, I say to the group. I don't think this particular moment of our day is going to be bad.
Maybe the best is yet to come.
No, this is going to be a horrible day.
Think positive, the glass is half full.
So is there a way that we can be stealthy and not... You said that the only way in is through the main cargo hold or to try to go around it. Is that right?
Yeah, so all you can see is about 15 feet up is... like a large cargo hatch that is a good, 20 feet across, where obviously they would bring supplies into the ship. Mm-hmm. But the next available porthole windows that would be visible are, a considerable height above you. You'd have to have some way of scaling this very sleek sort of Durasteel edge to climb up that high.
Gotcha.
If you follow the hull along the sand face against the rocks, like part of it is actually terminating like in the scrape that it carved into the mountain there. So it's kind of like up against the rocks on one side. Then you see the other side kind of hanging off the sand edge of the hill. So the only obvious access point would be the cargo hatch or scale the side somehow.
I would do a force leap and go to the cargo hatch.
Okay, roll me, please. Not to be a drag, but your current level of force leap is horizontal jumping only. There is an upgrade for vertical jumping. I will say, though, Nobi, you have a force ability called Enhance, and you can use that to boost your athletic skill. So if you'd like to enhance your physical athletics. So roll me a force dice, please. Okay, you have a dark side pip that came up. Would you like to use that?
Yes.
Okay, so you are now able to make an athletics check, and you get to add an automatic success or advantage to the roll. So the athletics check is going to be a hard athletics check. So you're going to do athletics with 3 purple dice, and you'll be adding an automatic advantage to that result.
So I did the athletics, 3 purple.
And then roll that.
Where's the advantage one?
We're going to just add it ourselves to the outcome.
Okay.
Okay, so an advantage would cancel out one of the failures. Unfortunately, as you try and make a huge running jump, you cannot quite get the 15 feet or so high and miss and kind of hit the wall. And you do manage to kind of push yourself backwards with your legs and then land in a roll in the sand. So you don't take any injury from it, but you weren't able to get up there.
Do we have any rope?
Does anybody have rope in their inventory?
No. Not on me.
I have a utility belt.
Me too. But it's not very long.
Yeah. Like a little pack, sort of.
Does that come with rope?
No, it does not.
Dang. Well, whoever gets up there should probably... Do we have, Well, no, we don't. We don't have any climbing gear at all.
I'm gonna look around. Are there any ropes hanging from where scavengers may have entered or exited the ship before we arrived?
Or long cables. In ways
The ship's still got power. Let's look for a rope first before we go long cable route.
If you look about, 50 to 100 feet to your east, there is a rappelling cable dangling from the side of the ship. But as you look higher up, there's someone actively climbing on it. They're perhaps halfway up the length of the hull, and they're making slow progress. They seem to be a little uncomfortable with the climb. But they are.
If he has to fall, I say.
No, we're not going to hope he falls, but let's just say as soon as he gets to the top, what if we were to
borrow it?
Looking at the person who did the force power on the backpack. I'm sorry, I still don't have the voices to the characters. Who was that?
Bior.
Bior. What if when he made it to the top, his rope kind of came undone in our favor?
Hint, hint.
Can I untie things, Albie?
You can move things. You would not be
Albie,
able
can
to
I,
sort of
can I tell him
knot,
to come down?
Say.
Can I tell the figure to drop?
No, this is going to be a shift game. Well, all right. I for one, am with Lord Vader.
Tyrus is kind of like a neutral fellow, I think.
I'm ruthless.
Okay, Tyrus, so you can do whatever you'd like to do.
My character is clearly in the Jedi camp. Though she doesn't always seem like it, but...
I don't really want to kill this thing because...
I guess that's why they didn't make a movie about our characters, because we all end up killing each other because half of us are Sith, the other half are Jedi. We were actually supposed to meet on this moon and get into a dramatic duel. Instead, we all ended up on the same trip together. Hilarity ensued. Yeah.
Rather than killing this little creature, maybe I can tell it to come down, and then we can use his rope.
He is still close enough that you would be within range of your influence ability.
Okay.
Yeah, if you just tell him to drop, it's not like we'll know you did anything. Yep.
No, I think it might be more useful if we find out who he is and we could search him and take whatever we need from him.
Is this guy alone?
Yes, he is a lone climber.
I think we should...
Let's try and talk to him. Yeah, I'm going to go with Tyrus and maybe assist with negotiating some access with this guy's rappel cables.
Not to mention we may be able to form some sort of alliance or get information out of him, so... I think he would be a useful person to question. So I would like him to come down now, please.
All right, I got this.
okay.
Tyrus,
wait,
let me see if I can help you out here. Maybe we should warn this guy that he's climbing a very volatile square of the ship. Why don't you, follow my lead. Let me step up here, and if you could help persuade this guy, I think we can work this out.
I think that's
okay,
a plan.
Okay, so you both are standing beneath where the rope is.
I'm going to run up to the guy urgently, and I'm going to say, hey, whoa, wait, you're going to get hurt. Slow down. Kind of waving my arms above my head to try and get his attention.
Okay,
and
I want to
reach out to him and give him the unmistakable urge to stop climbing up and come down immediately.
Okay, so the combined effect of someone screaming upwards at him as well as a direct mental intrusion, he kind of flips out for a second, kind of like looks around him to see what's right. He's very jumpy. You see him kind of immediately lose his footing briefly, and he has to roll a cool check, which he fails. So, with considerable threat. So, unfortunately, as you distract him momentarily, already not being a very strong climber, he loses his footing and immediately slips free of the harness and immediately starts to fall. He has created kind of a little catch spike that he drove into the Durasteel, although because it's Durasteel, not...
I am letting out a gasp, but amazingly feeling horribly guilty for joking that maybe he would fall.
And as he falls rapidly, the catch engages, but immediately snaps out of the Durasteel, and he plummets approximately, 50, 60 feet.
I'm going to start rushing that way to help him.
I'm going to try and catch him.
Yes, is there anybody that can force catch him?
Well, I'm going to try and naturally catch him, because I feel bad.
Victor, I will allow you to roll athletics or coordination for this. It will be a hard check. 3 purple dice.
I believe they are the same, but let me check my dice pools. Oh, okay. My coordination isn't terrible. 3 purple. Boom! Oh!
Okay.
God, fell right
on me. You move underneath to catch him, and unfortunately, he lands awkwardly on top of you.
Oh.
Ooh.
That's gonna sting.
Yeah. Heal your damage.
I am going to have to see fall damage. 1 second.
And they're both dead. Oh no!
Wah, wah, wah.
And then immediately after he falls on me, a spike comes up from the ground and stabs both of us.
Followed by a very angry cactus.
Threat and failure.
Okay,
out.
So he is falling from medium height. He's a silhouette one. So the way fall damage works is 10 wound and 10 strain multiplied by the range bands multiplied by the silhouette. So it's basically 20 wounds and 20 strain damage. You will only take half of that, however.
Oh my god.
So you are taking
so he breaks his deck.
Does my soak absorb 3 of those?
It does. It absorbs it for the wounds. It does not absorb it for the strain.
No!
God. Are you alive or...
He's fatter than I thought.
So you are at currently what wounds and what strain?
I should be at just 10 wounds. I have some, and then I'm at 10 out of 14 strain.
We were all healed before we left.
Okay, so he lands on you with a pretty nasty thud, and you awkwardly tumble into the sand. Thankfully, you're landing on sand, and you did break his fall. He's clearly injured. You're not quite sure how bad, and he is currently unconscious.
Medic,
you yourself are underneath him at the moment.
Oh, god. That hurt.
So who can heal these poor people?
I like to walk over and separate the two.
Please repeat that.
I kind of roll in the sand.
Pull the guy off Victor.
Making sure all my limbs are still attached.
Yes, you are intact, just moderately injured.
My bones are working. That's good.
And the gentleman is unconscious, and it appears like he might have some broken bones.
Oh,
maybe
geez.
He should have been climbing up this giant ship.
Can you guys help him? Maybe we can just get him propped up under some shade or something.
Well, our medic is not here, so if we move him, he can really screw him up. So why don't we check to see what he has on him if he's dying anyhow?
Well, I'm going to look at you like what?
By the way,
I didn't catch this guy so we could roll him.
Tyrus and Victor, you do have one conflict from that. Your attempt to save him, of course, mitigates that considerably, but
we feel bad.
Mark, I was going to get him to climb down and negotiate with him. Whatever.
Yeah, it's not your fault. He's not your fault. He's jumpy. He just was. He was out of his skill range trying to make that climb.
Can I reach out to him in his unconscious state?
Seriously.
Yes. However, let me resolve what Novi said. He was going to check what he had on him.
Oh, right.
No. Whoa. This is an injured person. We don't rob people that are hurt in the desert.
Can I get to any of these people?
You will, Nobi, you will see that he has a credit stick in his jacket with about 100 credits on it. And he has a digital compass as well as a light blaster.
I'd like to take all three.
I'd like to stop him. What are you doing?
We're just lightening his load.
You're robbing somebody that fell and is seriously hurt instead of giving them medical attention. That's not okay.
Or are we just trying to find out who he is?
Correct.
Okay, well, his credit stick doesn't tell
you
anything about who he is.
You do not find any ID on his person.
He's not carrying his wallet.
Yeah, no, we can't rob this guy.
We don't
want to rob him.
Not having anything to do with allowing somebody to rob somebody that's hurt. That is not okay.
I'd have no problem with this if he's dead, but he's not dead.
He's not dead. He's clearly alive.
Well, he might be dead.
What's the chance of him living?
Can I work on this guy?
I will totally help
Nobi,
you work on this guy.
Nobi, question to you. Hearing what Sarah said, do you still pocket the items?
I'm letting you know.
You can try and do it furtively if you'd like.
I will try to make deception.
I wouldn't take it if people don't want to take it, but I think he's dying and we can use the items. I think the chance of saving him is slim to none.
Hold on. Is this guy worth healing? Like, do you guys want
to? Please try to save his life.
Yes.
Because that's what decent people do.
I agree. Okay, good.
Didn't we find a sim?
Yeah, you know, if I'm bleeding to death, I really hope you guys, like, attempt to save me before you start ripping off my boots.
You're the one who wanted to fall. Yeah.
I didn't actually want him to get hurt.
The point being, don't we have a stim pack that we found in the backpack?
Yeah, we do.
You do? Yes.
Yeah, but I'd rather try to heal this guy.
That would be great if you can heal him by
Do whatever you need to do. What do you need us
to do? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at least it gives us a fallback position.
Just let me know if we can help.
All right, so let me check the difficulty on that roll.
And remember my new upgrades.
Tell me what they are.
Didn't I get the physician one? Wouldn't that help here?
Yeah, can you read it to me really fast?
Shit, hold up.
So basically it's two purple dice on a medicine check to try and heal wounds for him.
Yeah, basically it adds one.
Adds one what?
It says when making a medicine check to help a character with his wounds, the target heals one additional strain per rank of physician.
Oh, nice. Okay, so go ahead and roll medicine with two purple dice because he is half his wound threshold and damage. All right, so he actually He actually, you managed to stabilize him enough that he is no longer dying. He is still not fully conscious. He wakes up a little bit and is kind of obtunded and slow to respond when you speak to him and kind of ask him, hey, can you tell me your name? And he's kind of grumbling. But you managed to stabilize him.
Good job.
All right, well, he's not dead.
So now that we have him stabilized, again, we found a stim pack. It would be useful to get information out of him should we try to revive him a bit more.
Well, I mean, we're assuming that he has useful information. You wouldn't rather save this stim pack for one of us?
Well, that depends.
Hey, I'm okay waking him up. If we can, that way, let's see if he'll let us use his rope.
And what does he know about what's waiting for us inside the ship? It could be very useful to keep from getting perforated.
I mean, both these guys
and
are going to be...
We can't just leave him here.
Remember, this ship very obviously fell from the sky. I think we should make him a little lean-to, make sure he's okay, make sure he's conscious so somebody else doesn't come up and murder him for his shoes, and I doubt he's going to mind us using his rope.
Sarah knows exactly what kind of moon this is.
Dumpster fire.
Dumpster moon. Okay. All right. So Sarah, roll me a survival check with actually a boost dice.
We definitely want to leave him awake with his gun. I get
and
a booster.
Two purple dice and one boost dice.
And a boost.
Correct. One boost dice.
This is the nicest lean-to ever.
Yeah, so actually, you drag him to a section of the hull that there's like a sort of torn-up piece of metal above it that acts as a point to kind of hide him under, and you know push a bunch of rocks and sand and debris together to shield him from view, mainly, so that passersby won't immediately see him. And he is protected from the brutal sun and radiation. You put the blaster in his hand, and he is, at the moment, sleeping comfortably. You have made him safe for the moment. Do you want to leave any information with him?
Do you guys want me to use the stim pack on this guy?
No, if I think I've got him, like, successfully hidden, and you don't... I mean, we're just going to be using his rope. I mean...
And by the way, for those of you familiar with the races of Star Wars, this is a Bothan.
Aw, man. Bothan died to save the Rebellion, guys. Just remember that. It hasn't happened yet, but never forget the Bothans. They're like goat people, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna write a quick note.
Wouldn't you like to know why he was so nervous?
Probably because he's a junker and this is the coolest thing that ever fell from the sky and there's a bunch of people that want to raid it.
He's probably nervous because he saw a bunch of people running up to him. I guess.
Yeah, with their arms waving while he's being mentally intruded.
He had the strangest gut feeling that he was about to fall.
I'm just going to write a note saying, you know, we're borrowing your rope to get up. I hope you're okay. Tried our best to get you medical treatment. If you wake up, stay where you are. We'll help you get back to town.
Do you want to leave your comlink frequency?
Yeah, we'll leave a comlink frequency.
Very good. So you leave him in that position. He seems secure and sort of out of sight. And you return to the rope and kind of cut it down. And you have a section of rope now.
Couldn't we just climb up the way he was going?
If you feel comfortable making a formidable climb check.
No, I don't, actually. After watching him fall... Maybe we should have our best climber climb up to the cargo area that we found earlier and secure it for the rest of us.
Very good.
Sounds like that plan.
I got it. Yours, some rope. Who's taking the rope, by the way?
Who's the best climber?
I think I would be.
Probably whoever has the highest athletics. I would guess it's probably Bio or Anobi.
I'll try.
All right, I am going to add about 50 feet to your inventory.
Why don't you guys both try to climb it, and that way maybe you can spot each other if you get into trouble, and then find a good place to secure it and throw it down for us that are not that great at doing physical things.
Okay. Hey, I'll try climbing it. You didn't let me.
Okay, so with the assistance of the rope, it is now basically a easy check. It's an athletics check with one purple dice. Bayar, you can assist him, and if you do, he can add a blue dice to it. Oh, he succeeds. Okay. So, Nobi, you managed to sort of tie the... You tie a little rock to the end of the rope, and you start flinging it up there, trying to catch it around one of the little beams that are there. And after two or three tries, you kind of get it through and around, and then you tie the rope off and use it as a access point to climb. And you make it up to the platform there, and you have in front of you about 10 to 15 foot wide, large Durasteel door marked with a painted sign on it that indicates cargo access. There is a computer panel which still has power to it next to you. As you look behind you, you actually have a very clear view of the sand beneath you. You see over the edge of the hill where the edge of the ship is hanging off of. You see Thay's needles swaying in the winds in the distance. And over to your east, there's just more rock formation. So
I think it'd be great to have at least Bayar up here with me, so have at least two of us to look out after each other.
Well, I thought I made it up there with you.
Yes, we'll say that you both climbed up, Bayar and Nobi. You're on a platform. There's plenty of room on this platform, probably for a good 10 people, actually.
Hey, Vic, are you okay?
And you see a door there, which is closed, and you see a computer panel.
You going to be able to climb?
Yeah, sure. Just a couple bumps. Bruises.
All right, well, I'm not going to be very good with that computer panel.
Throw the rope down.
I try to get everybody else up here. I throw the rope down. I anchor it down and throw the rope.
Very good. With your assistance, you are able to get anyone who wants to come up onto the platform with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to see the computer panel.
Yeah, Victor's good with computers, too.
Let's pull up Tyrus to start.
Haul my giant forehead up the rock.
You see displayed on the screen a logo for Rhode Isle Luxury Holdings. As you kind of press on the pad on the screen, it's like a touch pad. You get a menu that comes up and it says to enter login credentials.
So
maybe we do gotta talk to that guy.
That's the question.
What am I up there yet?
Yes, you are.
All right. When I get up there, I walk over to the computer and politely ask Tyrus to step aside. Sparky up here.
Screen.
Can I attempt to hack the panel? Slice the panel, so to speak?
Yes, you can, actually. I would like you to roll for me a hard computers check, please. Okay. So you're unable to access the main features of the panel. However, you seem to have uncanny luck in sort of activating a debug screen, and you kind of get into a back door. And as you do, you just start seeing a whole bunch of characters kind of flashing wildly down the screen, and asking you to enter a requested modification to the program.
Oh, this is all making sense here. All right, open cargo doors.
And a little message flashes up that says, cargo system is not activated at this time. Do you wish to override?
Yes. Y, enter.
So as you do this, you start seeing strings of code kind of, you know, wildly flashing up on the screen. Your hand is like immediately kind of passing back and forth along the screen, responding to these different code attempts, and you're going to try and basically break through a back door here and get it to open. This takes approximately 10 to 15 minutes. However, within the first 5 minutes, all of a sudden, out of the distance, a rather deafening blaster bolt comes out of nowhere and shoots into the group of you.
I told you.
This always happens when I'm at a terminal.
Can we roll perception checks or anything to figure out where the fire came from?
Okay.
Mysterious sniper.
Holy shit.
Okay, Victor, this hits you, actually. A blaster bolt from the hill collection to the east comes out of nowhere, obviously from some kind of high-powered sniper cannon, strikes you, and you take 13 damage.
Not having a good day.
Not at all.
Today was
when do you tell if you're dead?
Okay,
Victor got shot out.
Okay, actually,
Victor dies.
Victor,
laser beam goes through his head. He falls down.
We never got to have that, like, you know.
There's that flashing symbol that says, are you sure you want to open the door?
Victor, we hardly knew ye.
Okay, so we are rolling our first critical injury here. Because the shot rolled 3 advantage, it is a critical hit.
And he's already hurt.
Okay.
How do you tell if you're dead in this game?
You're not dead, you're unconscious at the moment.
Like, how do you know when you're dead, though?
Okay, so the way death works in this game is if you run out of hit points, you don't die. You fall unconscious. The way you die is by getting repeated critical injuries without getting healed. The first critical injury, you know, puts something on you, like a permanent disability for the moment. And if you don't get it healed and you get another critical injury, it doubles the value of the roll. And basically, if you get up to 100 in critical wounds, essentially you die. So it's fairly hard to get killed in this game unless you leave critical wounds not tended to.
Oh, that kind of takes some of the fun away.
Well,
before you say that,
I'm not, you know, I love you, husband, but
I am totally okay with character death. I just figured since I'm like at 20 wounds out of 12.
Oh my god.
That I would be dead.
In this game, character death in this game is utterly permanent. There is no coming back. So,
I am okay with
that. It's harder to get killed.
It's just a flesh wound.
It's merely a flesh wound. Okay, so Victor falls to the ground. He does
He's been shot through the neck. There's like blood spraying everywhere.
Meanwhile, he managed to at least initiate the hack sequence, and it is still kind of running, even though he is unconscious on the ground. What would the rest of the guy do?
Thank God I saved that stim pack.
Attempt a perception for the sniper.
Yes, whoever would like to roll that, please roll it.
What is our difficulty?
Well, I'm on my way to Victor.
Your difficulty, if you're using the macro binoculars, your difficulty is three dice, three purple dice. Three purple dice.
And my keen eye doesn't apply here.
Remind me what keen eye does, please.
It removes a black square, is what the picture is, per rank of keen eye from perception and vigilance sex. Decrease time to search a specific area by half.
Okay, so in this case, you are not operating at any... No one's imposing a disadvantage on you, so it's not immediately useful.
And I also have Uncanny Reactions, which adds a white square per rank of Uncanny Reactions to all vigilance checks. But this is a perception, correct?
Perception, yeah.
Okay. Just trying to figure out how these things work. So, three difficulty dice with my perception, right?
Dog life.
Correct. Okay, so even though you're not really able to tell where the shot is coming from initially, by the time the second shot is fired, you actually see a glint in the distance off of the character's scope. The second shot is now fired.
And I'm going to try to give our medic cover fire to get to Victor.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, good idea.
And don't we want to open that door so we can get out of the range of fire?
Also that, yes. But I'm giving fire to the medic.
On the comm link, who owns the ship? The door, what did the door say, Albie? Is the, from who?
Rodau Luxury Holdings.
Which is the same, the droid came and offered us. Ah, maybe that's the thing. Can we contact the droid to ask for an access code?
Well, the hack's running, too. Shot was against you.
I'm sorry?
It hits you for 12 damage.
Who gets hit?
This sniper is
That is Tyrus.
You
right in the forehead.
You hit me in my giant forehead again?
Big-ass forehead.
You just imagine us all, like, crouched down, but it still hits him in the head because his forehead.
So, Tyrus, you are... at 10 out of 11 wounds, so you're hanging on by a thread at
Ow.
To consciousness.
Great.
It was right in the forehead.
Now you, Jensa, now you at least know where the shots are coming from, as you've seen the glint off of his scope.
I'm going to yell there and kind of fire as accurately as possible in that direction. Can I attempt a second spot?
You're going to be making a fire at formidable difficulty considering you're using a pistol, but go ahead and do it.
Yep, I'm mainly trying to give our medic cover fire.
So, four purple dice.
Four difficulty? Sorry, you keep cutting.
Yeah, four purple dice on that.
And you raised my gun stuff, right?
I did.
Hey, by any chance, am I in some type of cover?
Man, I am sucking.
Unfortunately, there is no visible cover. You are on an open platform about 15 feet up in the air, so fish in a barrel in this case.
Where do we stand with getting the door
open? I'm sorry?
Where do we stand with getting the door open? It's still running? Or does someone actually need to attend?
I should say Jensa is firing as carefully as she can into the distance, unable to really hit anything. And then
I am yelling, they're there, like trying to say trying to indicate the party in the direction of where I think the shooting's coming from.
What on the comm line? Who else can you reach?
All of a sudden, as you would expect the next shot to come out, you hear another blast. But as you hear it, you also hear a enormously loud kind of guttural grunt. And the shot, which had normally been quite an adept attack, is fired so wide of your location that it hits an area of the hall at least 20 feet away from you. And the firing stops.
He jammed his gun, hopefully. Grab Victor, see if we can get that door open.
Or somebody shot
him. The door immediately now opens as it shows a success to the hacking attempt. And as the door opens, you are able to access the interior of the ship. You have Victor on the ground and Tyrus on one knee, kind of bent forward.
If our wonderful, wonderful doctor could drag Victor in, I'll help get Tyrus in.
Yeah, I get the guy that's completely out. I drag him in.
All right, you guys kind of drag the injured indoors. The door closes behind you. You are now inside of a fairly dark corridor. There are a few flickering lights kind of like passing on and off briefly, giving a momentary view of the hallway. It's pretty barren. Clearly you're in a service area, as there's none of the usual luxury accoutrements here. This is just a durasteel passageway with a bunch of pipes and things like that kind of going every which way. It opens into a large stairway heading upwards, approximately 50 feet in front of you. And you do have a momentary respite to care to your wounded.
Alright, so I heal
the wounds of our
I definitely heal the unconscious. I think that's who's the one that's unconscious? Victor?
Victor is
unconscious with a critical injury.
Yeah, I address that. I address him first.
He's been like shot through the neck or something. Tyrus just has
how do you want to attend to his wounds?
Exactly.
Well, off the bat, with a force heal.
Okay, so roll a force dice for me, please.
Also, Albi, I have a talent called Codebreaker. Should I have removed one of the DC dice when I rolled that? Just curious. Or does it automatically apply?
It removes a setback dice. So in other words, if I tell you have to roll a setback dice, you can negate.
Oh, okay.
In that case, it was too easy of a decryption for that to apply.
Yeah, I gotcha. It didn't have a setback dice. All right.
Bayer, do you want to use that result? It's a single dark side pip.
Sure.
Okay, so, Victor is healed for two wounds. You now wake up.
My eyes barely open, and I say, damn door open.
Just relax here, buddy. Don't move.
Okay.
Okay, so you are awake. Fire, give me a medicine check, please, with two purple dice. Okay, you rolled actually, you don't heal any other wounds unless you want to use your stim pack on him. But he does actually heal three of his strain. So you are at seven.
Well, I mean, Victor's like way negative, aren't you?
He's now at 10.
So how much HP does he have? 10?
If you'd like to use your stim pack, he will be at 5 wounds instead of 10.
Oh, I see. And with this Stimpak upgrade that I got, wouldn't it be 6?
Yes, it would. Well, it would be 4, wouldn't it?
Does right. the Stimpak address my critical wound?
No, that will have to be healed. That will have to be... you can make one check per week, I think, for that, and he can do that when you guys are safe.
Can you roll for Akai since he's not here, since he has medical abilities?
Yeah, sure, actually. Give me one second.
I mean, technically.
Oh, could he have backed me up in this roll or boosted it?
I'll let him roll separately. It'll just heal for more. And now it's only one dice because he's not as severely injured. Okay, so you are now at 3 wounds out of 12. We'll remove the stim pack from your inventory, Byron. It is
Sweet.
Expended. Okay, now we are getting to a point where Nobi has to get going for tonight. What I would suggest, considering where we're at, we are going to call it here. You are currently safely aboard the ship. You've tended to the wounded. Well, one of the wounded. Tyrus, you're kind of banged up at the moment. Everyone except Jensa, roll a 10-sided dice for me. That's that fuchsia one at the bottom, on the bottom row. We're just going to resolve the conflict real fast.
I think I threw the wrong one.
So Victor, let's do yours first. You rolled a 7. Victor, you have rolled higher than your conflict, so actually you increase in morality. So your morality is now at 51.
Sorry, you cut out. I missed that.
Oh, basically your morality went up. You rolled higher than your conflict, so you increased your morality. Bior, 2 conflict. You also increase your morality, which is now at 54. Nobi, you also increase by 2 to 52. And then Tyrus. Okay, so, you know, since you all had relatively low conflict and you rolled higher than it, you increase in morality. And then if you don't have conflict, you don't roll for that. So it all clears out for the conflict points are zeroed out till the next session. And that wraps up episode 6 of A Candle of the Night. We hope you've enjoyed the adventure tonight. Join us next week as the heroes explore the wreckage of the Adhara Grey and see what secrets that it holds. Small announcement, on our YouTube site, we have a new video up. I created the video to explain a little bit behind the dice system in Fantasy Flight Games' Star Wars Force and Destiny. It is the same dice system they use in Edge of the Empire and Age of Rebellion as well, the so-called Genesis system. If some of you are a little confused about what the dice symbols mean and how roll results are discussed, triumphs, successes, failures, threat, all of that, I created about a 18-minute video describing the dice, what is on them, what they're called, and the most fun part was putting some examples in from the films with how those dice rolls might have unfolded if it were enacted on the tabletop. So check that out. Have a fantastic week. We'll see you soon.